Hong Kong Advanced Level Examination, Use of English, Section A, Listening Test, 2001. Instructions to candidates. You should have on your desk a question answer book. Do not open it until you are told to do so. I repeat, do not open the question answer book until you are told to do so. Now write your candidate number, center number, and seat number in the boxes provided on your question answer book. You are reminded that all examination materials will be played once only. The test is divided into two parts, Part 1 and Part 2. You should use a pencil to write your answers for both parts. At the end of the examination, when you are told to stop, put down your pencil and close your question answer book. You may not leave the examination room until you are instructed to do so at the end of the examination session. No one may leave early. Put your hand up now if you have any difficulties. It is not possible to handle complaints after you have taken the test. Now look at your question answer book. Check that your question answer book has no missing pages. Look for the words end of test on the last page. The test is about to begin. Keep your earphones on until you are told to take them off. Now look at page 1 of your question answer book. Introduction. Situation. You are a member of a student group which is planning a campaign to increase local awareness of crime. As preparation for the campaign, the group leader has asked you to attend a seminar in which two police inspectors will give advice about how to protect yourself and your property against criminals. The seminar is divided into two parts. In the first part, the police inspectors will talk about scammers or confidence tricksters. And in the second part, there will be a question and answer session on other crime-related issues. The group leader has asked you to take careful notes on both parts so that you can report back to him. Part 1. In this part, you'll hear two police inspectors talking about confidence tricksters. You'll have 5 minutes to familiarize yourself with the note headings for Part 1 before the interview begins. At the end of Part 1, you'll have 5 minutes to tidy up your answers.
Thank you. Hello, welcome. Thank you for coming to this, the first in a series of seminars involving the police, which we have given the title of Help Us to Help You. With us for this first session, I'm very happy to have Inspector David Perrins from the newly formed Task Force Against Confidence Tricksters. And in a moment, for those of you who are not sure, the inspectors will explain what confidence tricksters are, or scammers as they're otherwise known. The task force, which is called TACT for short, is a subdivision of the Crime Prevention Bureau. Welcome, Inspector Perrins.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
And with him is his colleague, Inspector Sue Lee.
Hi there.
Well, can I say first of all that our two guests are not here today to provide us with reams of statistics about crime rates in Hong Kong. Though some newspaper reports would have you believe otherwise, we all know that Hong Kong is a comparatively safe city to live in. The officers are here instead to give you some tips or hints, or whatever you want to call them, on how you can prevent yourself from being exploited by these criminals. Of course, they won't suggest that you try to catch them yourselves. Don't forget that enforcing the law is the job of the police rather than the general public.
Yes, leave that to the professionals like ourselves.
Now, in the first half of the seminar, the inspectors will give us some information about confidence tricks that are played in Hong Kong. They'll begin by describing how the tricks work. And believe me, some of them are very complicated and very clever. Then they'll tell us what kind of people play these tricks, you know, what their age is, what sex they are, what nationality, etc., etc. And then they'll tell us how to avoid being tricked.
Yes, I think the public can do a lot more to help themselves and the police.
That's right. While they may not break into houses or commit violent crimes such as bank or jewelry shop robberies, con artists or scammers, as we like to call them, are thieves in every sense of the word, in the same way as shoplifters are or muggers. The main difference is that they try to gain your confidence or distract your attention before they make off with your money or your belongings. That's why they often work in pairs or teams. As Sue has mentioned, the public can do a lot more to help prevent these kinds of crimes. In fact, the three most important things we encourage the public to do with respect to scammers is, firstly, to take precautions. A great deal of loss and personal upset can be avoided if a few sensible precautions are taken. Secondly, you should be alert, especially when strangers approach you with an unusual request. And our third piece of general advice is report anything suspicious. Even if you're not directly taken advantage of by a criminal, other innocent people may be at risk. Your vigilance may stop them from being exploited.
Let's begin with a simple trick. What's the most basic kind of scam these people can get up to?
Well, I guess some of the audience will have heard about the ketchup gang.
As in tomato sauce, like what you put on your French fries.
Yeah, that's the stuff. Okay, so there's a gang of these people, maybe three or four of them, and they work as a team.
And who are their targets? I guess it's people in public places, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right. But people in public places with luggage or heavy bags. Perhaps they've just been travelling or they're out shopping or something.
And when you say public places, I guess you mean airports, don't you?
Yes, but not only airports. I mean, it could be anywhere where people have to wait around with their bags. Bus stations are a popular haunt of scammers, for example. Alternatively, they may try their luck in busy shopping centres like Pacific Place or Sha Tin New Town Plaza. Another place the scammers like is crowded streets.
That's most of Hong Kong covered by the sound of it. So what happens then? How do the gangs run their scam?
Well, let's imagine you're the victim. The first step is the gang leader puts ketchup on your clothes. He may have a tissue with ketchup on it, or possibly mustard or mayonnaise. All he has to do is touch you lightly, like that.
Hey, this is a brand new shirt.
But next, he points out the ketchup marks to you. He says, "Excuse me, sir, you've got something on your sleeve," you know, something like that. Then he tries to clean the marks for you. What a nice chap, you think, offering to help you clean it. The problem is, while he's doing this, and this is the final stage, another gang member steals your bag. It's very easy to run off with someone's belongings if their attention is elsewhere.
So what do the rest of the gang members do? You said there could be more than two.
Well, they form a crowd around you. That's to stop you seeing the bag.
Aha! To stop you seeing the bag, of course.
Also, they prevent you from chasing the thief. They might do this by simply getting in your way or pushing you in the wrong direction, for example.
And the victim gets confused. So tell me, what sort of people commit this type of crime? Who should we look out for?
Well, interestingly, most of the culprits seem to be South Americans. They come from places like Colombia, Brazil, and so on. And we caught one team last year who used to fly in from Brazil every December during the Christmas holidays to work their scams on Christmas shoppers. The leader was called Ronaldo. We nicknamed him Rip-Off Ronaldo.
Because he looked like the footballer?
Oh, no, he wasn't bald or anything. He did look a little bit like Bruce Willis, though, which may account for his success with female victims.
Bruce Willis is the guy in Mission Impossible, right?
No, that's Tom Cruise, isn't it? Rip-Off Ronaldo had much shorter hair than that.
Sorry, I'm getting my movies mixed up.
Anyway, unfortunately for them, they returned once too many times to the same shopping centre, a place where they'd had a lot of success in the past. We had police officers stationed in three places. There was an officer outside each of the two main entrances, and also one inside where the stairs were located. Thieves tend to operate where there's a lot of movement, and that they can make a quick getaway. We discovered that Ronaldo's gang preferred to work their scams outside restaurants, fast food places, wherever there are a lot of people and you might conceivably get ketchup on your clothes. They steer clear of supermarkets because the checkout tills made it difficult to escape. And the other kinds of shops were not much use because there were too few people in them. They could easily be spotted.
So how did you catch them in the end?
Inspector Lee here pretended to be a customer, and the gang tried the scam on her. She arrested Ronaldo as soon as he smeared her with tomato sauce.
He may have ruined my blouse, but he was quite charming. The rest of the gang made a run for it, and Inspector Parent's man pursued them.
But they couldn't catch up. Sorry. That was a bit of a cheap joke.
Indeed. I don't think these scams are laughing matter. Neither would you if it were your bag that was stolen.
I beg your pardon. Of course, you're right. Anyway, where is the charming Rip-Off Ronaldo now?
Safely locked up in prison with his fellow scammers, I'm glad to say.
Oh, well, at least he'll have plenty of time to practice his football skills. Inspector Perrins, I imagine CCTV, I mean closed-circuit TV, was a great help in catching this gang, wasn't it? So many shops and plazas have video cameras these days.
They do, yes. And there are other aspects of security which can make the work of the task force much easier. Shops employ a lot of store detectives these days, for example. These detectives pretend to be customers and watch out for any unusual behaviour. Also, we have special police patrols during busy periods. By busy periods, I mean weekends, holidays, and so on. naturally, criminals stay clear of places where there are lots of uniforms.
Okay, so the catch-up gang can fool anyone, really. Anyone who's got bags or been out shopping. But what about some of the other scans you know of? The targets are a bit more specific, aren't they?
Yes, if you take the case of the Gold Ring girls, for example, their targets tend to be old women. Maybe your grandmother or your auntie or something.
And how does that scam work?
Well, it starts when a stranger approaches the victim on the street. Let's call the victim Mrs. Chen, for the sake of simplicity. Mrs. Chen may be out for a morning stroll or doing her exercises like Tai Chi. So this stranger comes up to her in the street and says, "Good morning," or "How are you?" And then she takes something out of her pocket, a ring, and says to Mrs. Chen, "Have you seen anything like this before?" Mrs. Chen is very impressed and asks if it belongs to her. The stranger replies that she found it where she works. When Mrs. Chen asks where she got it, the stranger explains that she found it on a construction site. Maybe a construction site somewhere nearby. By this time, Mrs. Chen is very interested. So she asks if the stranger has any more. The stranger says, "Sure, there are two or three more where that one came from." Of course, Mrs. Chen is a bit confused about why the stranger hasn't sold the rings. And that's when the stranger explains that she doesn't have an ID card yet, and that's why no one will deal with her.
Right, so what happens next?
Well, Mrs. Chen takes the ring.
What, the stranger just gives it to her?
That's right. It's a way of gaining her confidence, you see. Next, she gets the ring valued, you know, at a reputable jeweler's most probably. Or maybe she has a friend who knows something about gold.
And then, what comes after that?
She receives a very positive report. The ring that the scammer gave her is high quality gold, you see, and very precious. Then, as she's been told that the ring's worth a lot of money, she pays a large sum for the other rings. She pays in cash, of course, and probably has to use all her savings.
And how does the story end?
Well, she discovers the other rings are fake. They may have a small trace of gold in them, but nothing of any value. She's been tricked.
And how much would she be likely to pay for the fake rings? Quite a lot, I'd imagine.
Oh, gosh, yes. Just one of them may cost $20,000 or more. But people rarely buy just one. What happened is, many of the victims end up paying $80,000 to $100,000, depending on how many rings there are.
Wow. I was thinking more along the lines of $5,000 to $6,000. I didn't know old ladies had that amount of money.
Oh, the scammers are very good at picking out people with money, believe me.
So what kind of people are the gold ring girls?
Well, they're usually women aged between 30 to 40. Some work alone, but others work in pairs.
And what sort of advice would you give to elderly people like Mrs. Chan?
Well, the first thing is, don't do business with illegal immigrants, or IIs as we call them for short. The reasons for this are really a matter of common sense. For a start, IIs are already criminals, simply by being here. You also need to remember that some IIs are dangerous. Not all of them, of course, but some are. They may use violence if they can't get money out of you by tricking you. And a fairly important point is that there are no police records for IIs. Without records, we can't trace these people if they pull a scam on you. It's as if they didn't actually exist. As for purchasing gold jewelry, or any other jewelry for that matter, you should only buy from registered shops. Again, there are obvious reasons for only buying at registered ones. One, you'll get a more reasonable price. Reputable gold merchants are not out to rip people off. they have to remain competitive, particularly in a market like Hong Kong. Two, you can return the goods if you're not happy with them. Reputable shops should have a decent return policy. And three, I've forgotten the third point. Oh, yes, if a shop treats you unfairly, you can complain to the Consumer Council. It's much easier for the Consumer Council to take action against registered dealers as opposed to unregistered ones.
Okay, and many thanks, Inspector Lee. Let's have a short break now, and afterwards we'll talk about some of the other areas the Crime Prevention Bureau is involved with.
That's the end of part one. You'll now have 5 minutes to tidy up what you've written. Thank you. Part 2. In this part, you'll hear a question and answer session. You'll now have 3 minutes to familiarize yourself with the headings for Part 2. At the end of Part 2, you'll have 10 minutes to tidy up your answers.
Okay, I hope you've had enough time to refresh yourselves and digest the information about scammers given in the first half of our session. In this question-answer session, our guests have kindly agreed to talk about protecting your property against thieves or burglars. And we should note that property means anything that belongs to you. Now, somewhere in the audience, we have a particular group of students who've recently received a grant to develop a small self-access centre near their school. Self-access means learning by yourself, of course. This kind of centre represents property of different kinds. First, you've got the building itself. Then you've got the computers inside it. And then another kind of property is the work the students do on the computers. So we'll talk about all of these aspects. Could Joe Chan please identify himself?
Hello.
Ah, there you are. Joe is the project manager, so to speak, of the Self-Access Centre. And I guess we'll have many questions to ask about what the CPB can do for him.
Yeah. Well, I guess my first question is, how can we improve security at the center? We want to try and protect it as best we can.
Of course, a centre like this is an investment after all. To answer your question, I think the CPB can be of help right from the planning stage for facilities such as these. We would suggest that you include security concepts in the design, I mean the design for the building. Including such concepts at the design stage means you can choose the most suitable security system for your centre. There are different kinds of system for different environments. Also, it will be much cheaper in the long run. You can save yourself a lot of money before you even start construction.
Oh dear. Well, you see, the thing is, our building is almost finished. What measures can we take later on, do you think? I mean, at a later stage of construction.
Well, as I say, you'll probably end up having to spend a bit more money than you need have done, but there are still plenty of measures that you can take. The main service we offer for finished buildings is conducting security surveys. There's more than one purpose for these security surveys. The first is to identify areas of weakness. That's obviously something we're very experienced in. And of course, we also recommend practical solutions. Now, perhaps Inspector Lee can give you more details about what these practical solutions may involve.
Thanks. Now let's take doors to start with. How many doors does the centre have?
Two. A front door and a back door. And they both have locks.
Of course. We'll take that for granted. But you should fit steel bolts to the doors. Steel bolts are simple but strong, and burglars can't pick them like they can pick locks, you know, with a hairpin or a piece of wire.
Oh, right.
As for the windows, use reinforced glass, you know, strengthened glass. Reinforced glass is difficult to smash, even if you use a hammer.
Yeah, but that kind of glass is very expensive.
True enough. An alternative is you can put bars on the windows, steel bars or an iron grill. Then the burglars can't squeeze through.
Yeah. We've put bars on the windows already.
Okay, that's good. Now let's think about lights. It's a good idea to install an outside timer light. A timer light is one you set to come on, say at 8 o'clock every evening, and switch off at the same time in the morning. Putting a timer light outside is useful, because thieves prefer to work in the dark. They like the shadows. They don't want to feel like they're on show. Another good piece of advice is to leave a light on inside. There are two reasons for leaving a light on after everyone's gone home. One is that the burglar may think someone is still there. If they think someone's inside, they may decide not to break in. Most burglars do not want a confrontation which could lead them to being caught. The second thing is, the police can see inside. That is, if they're patrolling the area, checking up or whatever. Of course, you should also install a good burglar alarm. Get a burglar alarm from a reputable company. Alarms can alert the public as well as the police. Just think how often you hear a burglar alarm going off at night. Oh, one other thing I think you should remember to do is to put up warning notices, you know, signs which will deter burglars from trying to break in. You should advertise your alarms, not hide them.
Oh, okay. That's a good idea. We'll do that. Another thing is, the center is going to include a number of computers. I was just wondering how we could protect them better.
Nowadays, computers are popular targets for burglars. One thing you can do is bolt the computers to the desk. Then, of course, you can bolt the desks to the floor and so on. This obviously makes them difficult to move. Thieves don't want to play Arnold Schwarzenegger when they're stealing stuff. They want to get in and out quickly. The other thing you should do is mark the equipment clearly. You can do this with a marker pen with permanent ink, or a number tag, or something. Marked equipment can be traced more easily, and burglars don't like that.
All these things you've mentioned can be done in advance. But I'm wondering about security on a daily basis. What can people do about everyday security?
I'm glad you brought that up, as everyday security is a very important feature of our work. If we take Mr. Chen's self-access center, for example, as project manager, he can do a number of things. For a start, he can ask the students to sign in and sign out, you know, when they arrive or leave. Just put their names and the time in a logbook or something. He could also make the students wear ID cards when they're visiting the center. That way, people will know that they are members, even if they haven't seen a particular person before. Another thing he could do is put up reminders in the center, signs which say, "Don't forget to lock up," that sort of thing. And while we are on the subject of locking up, Mr. Chen could limit the number of people who have keys. The fewer the better. If everyone has keys, some are bound to get lost, and there's more chance of them being copied.
Now, someone wanted to ask something about computer data, I think.
Hi, I'm Fiona Yip. I'm the network security officer of the center. I've got a question. Do you give advice on data protection?
Yes, we do, as a matter of fact. I think as network security officer, you have quite a few responsibilities that will ensure better security for your data. I mean, the first thing is that you should try to keep a list of the users up to date. That's very important. Another thing that you have to do is to watch out for hackers. You know, hackers are people who try to break into your computer and access your information. A third thing is that you should restrict the use of software. By that I mean just keep a tight control on what software the people in the center are using on their computers to make sure they don't have viruses, that sort of thing. And another thing that's very important is if you have a dial-up facility for your computers, you should control the telephone access. You shouldn't let anybody just be able to dial into your computers, you know, so you might get people outside trying to steal your information. Now, the users, the people in the youth center also have a number of responsibilities. They should keep their user ID and passwords secret, and keep them secret at all times. That's very important. And on the subject of passwords, they should change their passwords regularly, say, you know, every 2 months or something like that. That will increase the security there as well. With whatever work you're doing, you should keep backup copies locked away. Don't just have copies on the hard disk, because, you know, if they get ruined you must have some sort of backup. So keep backup copies locked away in a cupboard somewhere. And a final thing, I think, which is important, is when you finish using the computer, remember to log out. If you don't log out, another person can come along and just gain access easily. So just remember to you know, finish what you're doing properly and log out properly. Another word about passwords, actually, I should mention, is ideally what you want with a password is a mixture of letters, symbols and numbers. So don't just use letters, or only symbols, or only numbers. Try to have a mixture, have at least one of each kind. And you should have at least 8 characters. Anything less than that, it makes it easier to, you know, kind of guess the password. So 8 characters and a mixture of letters, symbols and numbers.
Okay, thank you for that information. My last question is, what other facilities do you offer?
Well, the CPB has a number of facilities that we use around Hong Kong. One of them is called Robot Cop. And Robot Cop, we use, it's actually a small robot, and we take it around to primary schools. That's where its main use is. And what we use Robot Cop for mainly is to firstly promote civic responsibility. We find that's it's very effective with school children. We also use Robot Cop to warn against shop theft. You know, he has some recorded messages which children will press a button and they can hear him talk about shop theft, that kind of thing. And a third function of Robot Cop is to fight triad recruitment. Again, Robot Cop has some information that children can get about triads and how to watch out for them. The other main facility that we have is a mobile exhibition centre, which is actually a bus which travels around public housing estates. And inside the bus, you can find a display of security equipment, all kinds of security equipment for different uses. And the other function of the bus, the Mobile Exhibition Centre, is to give out information leaflets. You can get all sorts of up-to-date information when the bus comes around to your estate.
Okay, I think we should perhaps draw the seminar to a close now. A big thank you to our special guests, Inspectors Lee and Perrins, and a good day to our audience, who I hope will keep a closer eye on their property henceforth, whether it be at home, in school, or simply in their pockets.
That's the end of the seminar. You'll now have 10 minutes to tidy up your answers. Keep your earphones on until you hear the announcement at the end of the 10 minutes. That's the end of the test. Stop writing now and put down your pencil. Close your question answer book and leave it on the desk in front of you for the invigilator to collect. Take off your earphones now and turn off your radio.